This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Good morning, this is Scott Wells, and this day is Saturday, the September the 18th, and this is the third and final day of the 2021 Magi Fest. I think as you've heard here earlier, they're going to be having next year's Magi Fest going back on its regular schedule, so that'll be sometime in January. I believe in January, yeah, that's what he says. And so they want to try to get back on their regular early first of the year schedule, and he was saying the session in England is to be determined, I guess, yet at this point. But I'm guessing that towards the end of this convention, they're probably going to start taking reservations for January. But I'm assuming also they're not going to be competing with Blackpool. And not just, well, Blackpool, I think, February. But I do think, I know the SAM convention is in late January, so they can't compete with that. So I'm thinking it's going to be around that time-ish. But today we're going to be, as we kicked off yesterday, same kind of thing. I'm here with Richard Hatch. Good morning, Dick. Top of the morning to you.
Good morning. Looking like a good day.
It is going to be another beautiful day. Yeah. Another full day. So yesterday, I know how were things in the dealer's room? I know you were saying something about how that it is empty when people have the other events and everything.
Sure. So they have the dealer's room open continuously except for a lunch break. And that's despite the fact that there are ongoing events during the day. So I'm one of the, not all dealers go to the shows. My friend Andy Grigette doesn't go to any shows. He's happy to stay in the dealer room. I like going to the shows and the lectures. So I throw a cloth over my stuff and shut down to go to the lectures. Conveniently, they're right next door. But also, you know, the few times I've said, I should really be in the dealer area in case anybody comes by, and it's pretty much dead because I think everybody that's registered for the convention, unless they're dealers, goes to the shows. Why wouldn't you? And so it's a strange schedule. Today is going to be particularly strange. We open at 10, but at 10, the Simon Aronson Memorial event starts.
What's that'll going to be, you think?
Well, he passed away about a year and a half ago or so, and I know that there are going to be some live tributes. He was, of course, a great mentor to Joshua Jay, kind of a second father figure to him, and encouraged him greatly and inspired his magic. But people like his friends John Bannon, I know John has prepared, John is not here in person, but has prepared a video tribute where he performs one of Aronson's tricks and then teaches it. And I believe that'll be available as a free download to people that even aren't at the convention. But I did get to preview that, and it's excellent. And so I'm assuming it's going to be a bunch like that, people talking about Simon. Ginny is here, I don't know if you saw her, but
I
she came by
her.
The booth yesterday and said hi. And so she'll be here as part of it, and I think it'll be a very nice thing. So I plan to, even though I'm supposed to open the dealer room at 10 o'clock, I don't want to miss the Aronson event at 10 o'clock. But yesterday at 10 o'clock, again, dealers opened, but that was when Eric Jones was holding forth, which I know he said, you know, I don't normally get up this early, and he seems like a nighttime kind of guy. But the room was packed, unlike the dealer room, which was pretty much empty. Mm-hmm. And so he performed, and then I did leave early to just make sure no one was in.
Eric has a huge following socially, and so whenever we had him in Houston as a lecturer, we had people who showed up who've never come before nor since, and because I think he just put it out in the social media, tweet, and with everybody, and people from hundreds of miles will come around. And so that's why I think is he is preaching to his group yesterday, and they were all showed up because they knew he was going to be there.
Right.
I mean, he's got his minions, and he is really good, and he's so nice of a guy, and on stage, and when he's saying, that's a great question. Well, thank you for that question. Thank you for being here. It just was very personal.
Yeah, someone came by the booth and told me they thought he was one of the best teachers in magic, and apparently both his parents are teachers. I don't know if they're school teachers or what level, but that he has, you know, he has that teacher gene and apparently is really able to communicate the technical information that he wants to the audience in a very effective way. So I was sorry personally to miss. I saw most of the performance, but I had to leave to check out the dealer room to make sure, you know, I was holding down the fort. So it's a similar thing today. So like from 10 to 11 is the Simon Aronson event. Then there's a half hour where nothing is happening with the dealer room. But then at 11:30, it starts the Steve Cohen guest of honor presentation. Well, who's going to miss that? He's the guest of honor. I'm going to go. I don't want to miss anything there. Then that goes till 12:30. Well, at 12:30, the dealer room closes for lunch for 2 hours and doesn't open again till 2 o'clock. Well, at 2 o'clock, Carissa Hendricks starts her lecture, which is excellent. And I've heard it before, but I wouldn't mind hearing it again. And again,
it's new things.
Oh, okay. Well, then I definitely want to go, so I'm not going to open the dealer room then. She goes till 3 o'clock. There's nothing till 3:30, so there's a half hour there for the dealer room. And then Nate Staniforth starts his show and lecture. Well, I don't want to miss that. He's excellent. That goes till 5 o'clock. So after 5 o'clock, the dealer room, no, the dealers are open till 6, but at 5:30, Ossie Wynn's lecture starts. Who's going to miss that? So we've got three half-hour spots to do something in the dealer room, from my point of view, which is kind of ridiculous. And it's the last day, so also on top of that, then we have to pack up and clear out of there by a certain time. So, yeah, Ossie goes till 6:30, the dealer room closes at 6, and then the gala show is tonight. So it's going to be a full day. Not necessarily in the dealer room, although there are people that sometimes they'll make little piles of stuff and come back. I had a guy set stuff aside on the first day, and he actually paid for it. I haven't seen him since. I've been worried about his stuff walking away from me, and he comes back to get it, so I'm hoping to see him today because I haven't seen him since the first day. But.
Well, last evening, just to wrap up here real quickly, a couple of things. Of course, yesterday afternoon at 4:30, Joshua Jay talked about How Magicians Think, his new book. It's going to be out for the public. And Andy Gladwin was talking with him, and it was great. But just before that, we had Alex Boyce, who did his Dove show, Dove act and everything.
Yeah,
but when was it? Oh, it was the Magi Fest session.
Right.
That was great. And Andy Gladwin, among others. I mean,
Terry Ward opened it, I think you said Street Shell Game. I missed that, but I heard it was excellent.
It was really good, and he gave all the details and had more questions asked on the Three Shell Game than any other lecturer had asked about anything.
Wow.
They were very interested in all his presentation and everything, and he was just he was emotionally moved by how much that he was appreciated, you know, because he's done 30,000 shows for Disney over 30 years or something.
Yeah. Wow.
But the I think one of the highlights there, of course, was whenever Andy was talking about piracy and magic and what they have done to track down. It seems like it's like a whack-a-mole. When you knock it down, there's something else popping up, and you think there are thousands of guys, but they've tracked it down to like one person, I think, or something.
Well, it's a very small community of pirateers, and they've been able to pinpoint them, and he talked about the technology that allowed them to do that, which was fascinating in itself. And then they had three names that were different names, but all coming from the same computer, which turned out to be in Serbia, of all places. Mm-hmm. They went there. They hired secret detectives in Serbia who tracked these guys and sent them photographs and then
did background check.
Yeah, and then arranged for a security detail to make sure that Andy and Josh were safe when they got there, because Serbia is problematic. Josh and Andy and some others from their team went there and confronted these guys, or this guy, as it turns out, made him an offer saying, take down your site and we'll forget about the whole thing. And the guy doubled down. He added twice as many Vanishing Ink products that night. Yeah. So they're taking legal action. It's not clear what the next step will be, but it was fascinating to hear about it. And apparently they've gotten the support of other ethical dealers in the magic community who are saying, this is going to ruin our business if it's not stopped. So we gotta be proactive. We got to do this. We can't let it go.
And not just dealers, but creators also. I thought it was phenomenal, in which he was saying this guy was releasing things before the actual creator got theirs out. And they could do it below the cost of what they can make it for. I don't get it.
Yeah, it is. He talked about how they listen in on chat rooms and, they get wind of a coming release before it's released, and they'll release it. In terms of advertising it, they don't have the physical product or anything, if it's a download or something, but they'll advertise it before the creator advertises it. So they get those initial advance orders, which is where most of the initial seed money comes from or whatever, and so they're taking that away, and then when it gets released, then they order one product from Vanishing or whoever is doing it, and then they spread it out there. Yeah. So he did say, I asked Andy, because I missed the beginning of that and wanted to see it, and he said it might be uploaded in some fashion to the Vanishing Ink site so that people, again, can see his talk. It's like a little TED talk on piracy and how to deal with it. It was excellent.
It was great. Then later that evening, then Lucy Darling gave her show. Now, those of you who have seen that, I thought she did a few things that were different. She did a linking finger ring routine that I had not seen before.
Excellent. Yeah. No, I thought so, too.
We had a full hour, and I'm one of Lucy Darling's fans. Me apparently, too. There are different camps.
I don't know.
I talked with some people last night saying, you know, I think I might miss that show. I'm not a big fan.
No,
it's
no,
like, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
You know, for those of you who are listening to this, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to chat with her today, and I'm doubting that because of...
She's got a lecture and all kinds of stuff going on.
Does.
She's busy, yeah.
But also, when I was at TAOM, I spent some time with her, and I would recommend if you go back and listen to that, because she had made an announcement during that our chat that she has just been signed by Philip Morris, which means...
Wow.
Which is a major agent that's going to be handling her, so she is about to go nuclear, basically.
Yeah, wow. That's exciting. I had not heard that podcast yet, so that is very exciting.
So that's going, go back to that was one from the TAOM just recently. And then Ossie Wynn closed the show last night.
That was fantastic.
Of course. Well, it's Ossie Wynn. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was unbelievable stuff.
Yeah. Everybody was
miracles.
Just, if people didn't want to leave, they were of course, he's going to be lecturing tonight, and they were thinking, okay, why don't you lecture right now? This is so good. You know, like, nobody wanted to leave the room.
Right. Oh, it was fantastic. Did some stuff that he said was inspired by Chan Canasta. That was great. And,
I didn't know Chan Canasta actually was Israeli, I think, didn't he say?
Palestinian. He was, I think, from Poland or Czechoslovakia, but he did spend time in Palestine and then went back to England, joined the British Air Force during the Second World War, and pretty much stayed in England. Later, he did retire and go to Israel, where he had a painting career. You can find his paintings under not the name Chan Canasta. I think it's his Mifilo, you know, his whatever, his real name. Right, his paintings, watercolors, are highly sought after by collectors. Mm-hmm. A fascinating character, and paved his own path, which, now people whoever we're talking about right now, senior moment here, sorry, Scott.
Ossie Wynn was
it. Ossie Wynn. People like Ossie are following in his footsteps and inspired by it. But Ossie took it to the next level. The thing that a lot of people know about Chan Canasta is his two-pocket thing. And I remember in Houston, one of the first meetings I went to, Johnny Thompson was performing at Magic Island and came to the meeting. Mm-hmm. And he, using Osterlin Stack, performed that Chan Canasta pocket thing, which is you've got the spectator has cut the deck freely behind their back and puts... One card in one pocket, one card in another pocket. They don't know what the cards are. They don't know which cards are in which pocket. And the mind reader, in this case Ossie, in the original case Chan Canasta, predicts what the cards are and then makes it confrontational, saying, now, you know, which pocket do you want to have the ace of spades? It's your decision. Whichever pocket you decide, that's where it's going to be. And it's not, there's like no outs. You reach in there, you take it out. That's where your card is going to be. And Ossie had taken it to the next level. In the traditional one, you're working with a stack deck, and the person takes off the top and or the bottom card. Doesn't matter. The stack will tell you which cards they are. They won't tell you which pockets they're in. And Ossie did that with the first card, said, you know, take a card from the top or the bottom. Your choice, doesn't matter. But then on the second card, he says, reach into the middle of the deck.
That's what got
Take
me.
Out any card from the middle. That put it in the other pocket. Yeah, so now it's in the miracle class, even if you know what Chan was doing. And then he did the same thing. So I'm going to give you 5 seconds to change your mind. You know, you want it in the right pocket. In the next 5 seconds, it'll be in the left pocket if you change your mind. Up to you. Your decision. Whatever you decide, that's where it's going to be. Count it down to five. Guy reached in his pocket, pulled out the ace of spades or whatever it was that he'd said would be in that pocket, and that's where it was. And then the other card was in the other pocket. How could he have known them both? It's pretty amazing.
I've got a theory on that, but... He'll explain it tonight.
That'll be a lecture question.
That's right.
But it was awesome.
Well, it looks like it's going to be another busy day, and thanks very much. And I am enjoying rooming with you. We're having great conversations. It's a lot of fun. About time again for breakfast for us to head down.
All right.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Richard Hatch. Scotty out. We just finished the memorial for Simon Aronson. And I thought it appropriate, since Simon is known not only for his two-person act, mind-reading act, with his wife Jenny, but also with Aronson Stack and so many other things he did with cards and everything. And so I thought, it would be more appropriate than talking with a guy who is another excellent card magician, with Scott Robinson, who also is the organizer of the Tri-C's, or Tricks Convention. And so hello, Scott. Good morning.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you very much. You knew Simon pretty well, probably.
I did know Simon pretty well, both from 4F, and him and Jenny came to Tricks as well, and he did. They did the second side act for us, and I'm kind of in this little emotional state right now, because I think there's been two things at this convention that both kind of seemed important to me. And one was the Simon Aronson Memorial, which was fantastic. And it was great seeing Jenny before and kind of talking about what they did for us down at Trix. But, you know, it's great to be reminded that wonderful magic thinkers are also these wonderful human beings.
Well, that was right? something I really got a lot out of that. That people who didn't know Simon so well, perhaps, they really emphasized the fact that not only was he an excellent and creative thinker and intelligent beyond words, but also was the most genuine and nice human being who would sit down, as Josh was saying, at these conventions, Magi Fest, with young people one-on-one. I mean, he wasn't looking for fame or something to get back from somebody. It was just, there wasn't a contract. I'll show you something, you show me something. It was like, let me share something with you.
It was, you know, there's people you meet in the community, and there's fabulous, wonderful people. I love the community. But then there's people you meet like Simon who are, you know, the authenticity is there, right? There's never any doubt what type of person they are. And him and Jenny both were just givers. They're, as long as I've known them, 20 years probably because of 4F and other things.
Right.
And they've just always been so giving to the magic community. And, you know, I think you see their influence in Josh. I thought Josh Jay's presentation yesterday, the passion around his new book, but it was obvious he was not doing the book for the fame of doing the book.
He wanted to get back. He was talking about how many years he's been doing this, and also he has other books that are out for the public that he kind of felt like it wasn't so much he was prostituting himself, and he was just doing this for the fact of because they demanded he include Trix. He wanted to do a book that really wasn't a book of Trix, and they finally got to do the book, so he had something true to himself that he wanted to do.
For me, that presentation he did is probably the best thing I've ever seen Josh do at a convention.
Yesterday, and
that,
you mean?
Yes,
yeah.
And that means I've seen his one-man show, which is fantastic, but yesterday was so authentic and so real for me. Like I said, there's been two kind of emotional things for me. What came out of him as he was telling that story, and Andy did a fantastic job interviewing him and the questions. But when you see someone that passionate, it's hard not to feel. Yeah,
that's right.
It was. I'm so glad I came. I'm so glad they had this. I think the community needed it right now. I've been to three. I stopped by TAOM and saw you guys in Texas when me and my wife was visiting, and then I was at Mays last week.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
It was good. I mean, it's a small regional convention, which had some great talent you hadn't seen, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. Mark D'Souza did a great job. That whole team, I met more wrestling fans. It's always funny. I meet wrestling fans that are magicians. So that was good. And then this is smaller, which I'm glad, right? I think, I don't know how many people they have.
Actually, they have 500.
They have 500. Yeah. Last year they had 9, right? Last time they had it, not last year.
Yeah, right.
They had 9. But it's just, I'm seeing you, and I just see so many people.
Yeah.
I think that's what we miss. It's not
camaraderie.
Yeah, it's not the lectures or the shows. They're great. But they're the glue, right, that give us something to, a reason to get together.
To get together, that's true. And such a variety then as well of different things they've had. I mean, you know, from Lucy Darling and her lecture coming up later.
How great
Steve,
was she last night?
Yeah, she
was fantastic last night, right?
I agree. She was she was hot.
She was
on fire.
Her, you know, I listen, I know Carissa, and she told me how she developed some of that, her ability to talk to the audience.
Yeah.
And she talks about working burlesque shows and just going out there and not doing any magic till really the end and spending all this time just talking to the audience.
Right.
It showed last night. It was fantastic. It was really fantastic.
She's good at improv, for sure, you know, and relating to the audience then as well, whoever it is, because I've been watching her doing essentially the same show for the TAOM and knowing the bits she was doing and some things that are scripted, certainly, but when she went off script, of course, that's the better part, and knowing, okay, well, that was just for us. That was for that night, you know, in the moment.
But yet, there's a skill there, because she's a character, so she has to improv as appropriate for the character she is in, not as she was improv as Carissa, right?
Correct.
And that there's just fantastic skill and knowledge.
As she says in her lecture, she only does things that would be appropriate for her character. In other words, that it would not be appropriate for her, for Lucy Darling, to reach down. If she drops something, it's like, I guess that wasn't important. I'm not going to pick it up. Right. Someone else can pick it up for me, but I'm not going to reach down. And then she makes a joke out of that.
It was, that's been what, I enjoyed that quite a bit. There's been some great magic here. But I'm just I'm glad
Ossie Wynn was great last night. I'm looking forward to his lecture.
What they gave
yes,
us,
yeah. I was right? about to say, please, because first of all, on the Simon Aronson thing we were talking about, then whenever that Josh was and Andy were hosting this, and we had Jeff and Tessa Evison come out, a two-person mind reading duo to begin with, and kind of giving a tribute then to Simon and Jenny. It was great, and then they had other people who were coming up afterwards, as well as video presentations from David Regal and
it was
and
fantastic.
Others.
Yeah. And they had this wonderful
giveaway
gift for us, which is a booklet of tricks by some of Simon's friends, some of his unpublished material, a nice little write-up by Jenny. Just these guys.
It's not for sale. This is just a special thing for people who are here.
Yeah,
there was. I'll post a picture of it for the website. Well, we got about 117, 118
pages.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's so well laid out, but it shows the type of people Josh and Andy are. Really, they're always looking to give back to the community. And
Josh always, as you said, considered Simon to be his uncle. He called him Uncle Simon.
Which
they were so close.
Yeah, and you know, when I've known Josh since he was a little kid, too.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember how affectionately, even to today, I always remembered him talking about Simon, kind of like a member of the family.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we have a special... We have something special among our community. And
there
it
is. And when I think about Josh, also about the early Magi Fest I went to, I remember going to dinner with him and his dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I know how much he cares for his father still, you know, and his family is very important. And, from knowing him as we have since he was a little kid.
So.
It's been a good convention.
It has been a good convention.
So tell us about Tricks real quick, and then we'll
Sure.
So is that full?
It's still on. Yeah, so we do a little interesting thing in that if you go to the website right now, it will say we're sold out, but then it will say don't stop reading, right?
Yeah.
And
that's,
the reason...
By the way,
TRICS,
TRICCS.
TRICS.
CS, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the word Tricks, but without the K, right?
So Tricks.
Yeah, because it stands for Carolina Close-Up Convention, right? So where were we?
You're talking about the website, because even though it says you're out.
But keep reading.
Yeah.
The reason we do that is because we'd like to sell some tickets to the public for the final show. So I have a cutoff for people that get to go to everything live, including the final show. But if you register late, you still get to come and do everything. Even the final show, you just have to watch that out in the restaurant area. We put it up on the screen. So we're never going to turn anyone away. We're going to figure out how to accommodate them. Tricks is what I would call a family reunion style convention. It's really about sessioning and the time between things. We have the lectures. I even make sure there's an hour and a half at least between every event, so we have plenty of time to session. And it's like 4F, we don't start until a little later in the day, so we don't have to get up at 9 o'clock in the morning or anything.
Good.
So it's coming together. I have concerns about my international talent. I don't know what's going to happen. I may have to replace them at the last minute. But
Horace Wilde recently had a convention he was supposed to attend had to cancel.
Yeah, he had to cancel. His fiancée performed there. I went up to.
Really?
She's part of my local Charlotte group. She does
Slight Club.
Yes, she does the Georgia Wonder Act. She has a really cool modern spin on that, so she went up there and lectured on the history of the Georgia Wonder. But hey, you know what, Steve Brundage,
I was walked by. We just talked yesterday. I was just talking. One of the first conversations I had on this podcast convention report was with another friend who is a member of the Slight Club, and I just met him for the first time, and that was Caleb Morgan.
Yeah, Caleb is, and Caleb now works with Jeff Copeland with Copeland
and
Coins.
Jeff was sitting on his side,
And Jeff, and Jeff was a member of Slight Club when he was in Charlotte. So there's good talent comes out of that group. You know, you guys may know Brian Sain and John Michael Hinton and all these guys that were on Foolus. Kyle Littleton. So we're putting together a convention. We're only, unless the state says I have to cancel it, we're going to have a convention, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. So that's my next and, at this point, final convention for this year.
Yeah,
I mean, I've had a bunch of
this is your first
time. My first Tricks.
Your first Tricks, yeah. I can't, I'm so excited to have you there, man.
Well, you and I were talking, I believe, and I would recommend for those of you listening to Scott right now to go back into it, listen to an episode I did exclusively with Scott, and you were talking about that, and it kind of convinced me at the time. It's like, why have I not been to this one? And it's just, I thought, now the timing is right, and I can't wait to come.
So. I'm glad you're coming. Can I mention one other thing? So I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been an abundance of magic theaters popping up all over the country. Well, my wife actually opened a place called the Magic Canvas, and it is a sip and paint. So people come and have private events, sip and paint, but at least twice a month it turns into a theater, and it's four acts, three acts in the first half, a headliner at the end, and we've been to a magic show since last October. Reduced capacity, of course, but magic shows. Doing live magic. I love virtual
shows. One-man shows kind of things?
Yeah, so the first half is three Slight Club folks, and then we bring in people. We've had Dan Harlan. We have Eric DeCamps in October. We have different people come in. And
so weekly, monthly?
So at least two times a month.
Okay.
Yeah, two Saturdays.
You go to the website to find them.
TheMagicCanvas.com. Also looking for talent that's coming through the area.
Okay. And when they do just a one-man show, is that a half hour, hour, 45 minutes?
So the first half of the show is about 45 minutes. We have to have that intermission to sell beer and wine, right? And then the second half is their show, so usually 45 to 50 minutes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
So good.
How big's a theater?
We hold about 50 to 60 people, depending on the layout we use.
That's nice.
Yeah. So
congratulations. I'm glad that you've got that, you keep the magic going.
Oh, man. We picked the worst possible time, but it's working.
But we've got nowhere to go but up, right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I look at it from a glass, you know,
half full.
Yeah. We're about to fill up the rest.
Yeah.
Well, thank
right.
you very much, guys. Great
Thanks,
talking
Scott.
To you, as always.
Great. Take
Magic
care.
Word Podcast. That was Scott Robinson. Scotty out. I finally got an opportunity to tie down somebody who is ephemeral, chimerical, someone who is hard to find, it seems like, because he's always busy and hard to find a few minutes to pin down, and constantly creative, constantly busy, and he was the first one up as a lecturer for day one. Please welcome Brent Braun. Hey, Brent.
How are you, Scott?
Fantastic. So I know you're no longer with Penguin. You've got your own company that you're doing. Tell me more about kind of how that break and what you're doing.
Yeah, so even when I was with Penguin at a consulting company called The Magic Firm, so that's what a lot of my work was doing. I was doing events for them, but I was also doing a lot of consulting for television, live performers, and that sort of thing. But 2.5 years ago, we sort of built a space to host that, sort of a home office for The Magic Firm, which includes a magic shop, a brick-and-mortar magic shop, and a 30-seat theater. So now people that we consult with can actually come into the space, perform in the space, consult in the space, and we can not only write new things, but then we can put them in front of real people immediately to see what the results are of those ideas.
Where is that located physically?
It's in Louisville, Kentucky. We're actually in New Albany, Indiana, but that's like 3 minutes from downtown Louisville, Kentucky. So we like to say we're in Louisville.
With a studio and everything there?
Yep, everything's there. Yeah, everything's there. A little brick-and-mortar magic shop and then a 30-seat theater. And if you're ever in Louisville, stop in. You know, if you land at the airport, we're about 12 minutes from the airport, so it's a super easy drive if you're staying out that direction.
Uber over and come back, and that way you can catch your flight.
Yeah.
And between flights.
And because we're there, we're only there Wednesday through Saturday, just because we're so busy. But if anybody's ever in town, they can get us on the website, and I'll meet them there and open the doors for them, right?
What's the website? Where do they find it?
Brickandmortarmagic.com.
Should be easy enough to find.
Should be pretty easy to find. And then if you get there, you can just there's actually my phone number. You can text me directly. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to be in town on Monday, you guys aren't normally open. I live a few blocks from the shop. The truth is, a lot of days that we're not open, I'm still in the shop. I'm in the shop working on things anyway. So I'd love to see these guys.
What's the thinking of opening up a brick and mortar, and even calling it brick and mortar, in the time when all of them seem to be closing?
Yeah, well, so it was really designed as the as the headquarters for the consulting firm, right? So I was already renting studio space when Axe would come to town and spending a little bit of money doing that. And then it just ended up that I was spending more money doing that than rent would cost. So I was like, oh, what if we just rented a building and then built this theater and made this thing actually work? And then the idea became, oh, then we could perform, the acts could perform in front of a real live audience, which is important, right? Because we can write all the material in the world, Scott, but you know this, until it gets on stage, you don't know if it's going to fly, right? We're doing a little bit of aviation. It's crash and burn, and sometimes you just got to crash and burn. So we come up with ideas, we put them on stage, and then immediately we have feedback. And we go, this can work, but it needs to be slower, or this joke needs to be moved, or we need a better premise or a better hook. But we get to see that in real time in a way that you and I alone in a room can only speculate as to how it's going to work.
That's right.
When we put it in front of a live audience, we immediately know, like, oh, this won't work at all.
The two things you can't rehearse is timing and misdirection. You have to have an audience. 100%. You can do all the mirror and all the video you want, but until you have an audience, timing and misdirection are the two things. You need an audience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a lot of that, for a lot of the performers, a lot of the young performers that I'm working with are guys that just don't have that opportunity to have that much flight time, right? Yeah. So we can write a show for them, and if they do it 30 times next year, that's not enough. You know, we need them to do it a couple, because if you're doing it 30 times a year, you're doing it twice a week, or you're doing, you know, you're just not, or not twice a week, but you're doing it every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you just can't block and rehearse it enough. You've got to, the best performers I know in the world are street guys and theme park guys. Because a theme park guy goes in and does the show 6 times a day.
Well, trade show guys, too. You got to remember.
Trade show, that's true, too. That's true, too. Yeah. And I sort of consider that a little different because I'm not looking at that as a theater show.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that sort of as a different thing. But you're right. Anybody that's doing 6 to 10 shows a day is getting better fast because you just do, right? You learn to swim much quicker in that situation.
You already do. Now, you talk about consulting, and one of the things that they were talking about when they introduced you is about how that you had been consulting with people who have been winners of AGT, and not only America's Got Talent, but also Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah, it's sort of crazy. When I was 20 years old in my parents' basement, I created a trick called Torched and Restored, a torn and restored card, and now it's won both Britain's Got Talent and America's Got Talent, right? Variations of it, but it's the same sort of core of what I created in my parents' basement, which is sort of crazy to think about. But and we do a lot of consulting with that stuff. Do a lot of television consulting. I'm primarily known right now for my Fool Us consulting. You know, I've gotten close to 70 guys on that show now over the last 8 seasons.
Does Mike Close and some of the guys send people to you, or how do they seek you out?
No. I just have a reputation, so people. Yeah. I'm not hired by the company, and I do not work for production of Fool Us. I'm individually hired by people who want to be on the show, and then we work through that process. So I have a fee. You come to me and say, I already have a trick, or I don't have a trick. I'm not sure what I want to do. And then we write that entire process. Of course, that comes with no guarantee that I'm going to be able to get you on the show, but it does come with a guarantee that your show will be more television ready, because doing magic on television is completely different than doing magic live. If we do magic live in a theater, you have come into my space, you've gotten a babysitter, you've had dinner, you put your butt in a seat. It's going to take a lot for you to get up and walk out of that show.
Right.
On television, you're a single channel click away from not being on TV anymore. So if you don't have a great hook at the beginning, and you don't have, you know, we sort of talk about jokes per minute. How many jokes per minute do you need to do to keep your audience engaged?
Right.
If you don't have those things, what you do on stage, and there's also weird things I don't think people think about. On stage, we constantly talk about, you have to care about the audience member you bring up. Don't use them as a prop. Right?
Right.
If you bring
right.
somebody up, don't just have them hold something and then send them back
to
the seat. Has to be a reason for them to come. That's not true on television. On television, I don't care the spectator's name. I don't care. And it sounds abusive and weird, but it's because
time.
It's because timing, and because the 3 million people watching from home don't care who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in the same space with them, and they're not invested in a way that they would be if they could see them in the lobby after the show afterwards, right?
Yeah.
So it's a completely different game to create television magic than it is to do what you do in your current show. And then to come try to do that on TV. If you're doing a thing in your current show, it's not ever going to be on Fool Us. Because number one, it's already been done, right? If you're doing Build a Lemon, it's already been done on the show, number one. Number two, the presentation has to be completely changed to make it work for that venue.
I remember talking with Suzanne, for an example, and when she was on Penn & Teller Fool Us, and she was talking to Johnny Thompson, showed him, it's like, that's a great trick, but that's not going to fool him. And so she needed to go back and rework, and came back, and she didn't end up fooling them, but it was a completely different method, but the same effect, basically, you know. So there is a whole lot to exactly what you're saying, and as far as what the timing's going to be and everything like that. Joshua Jay was talking there yesterday about when he was on the James Corden show, and how they said, okay, we're going to have to trim you down from 12 minutes to 7 minutes or whatever it was, and so he has to do certain things in order to make sure you fit within the time guidelines.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at America's Got Talent auditions, they want you to do 90 seconds, right? How do you do anything in 90 seconds? I can't get on stage and say my name in 90 seconds, right? Let alone set up a theatrical hook, set up a premise, and then resolve that premise.
Right.
In 90 seconds, it's impossible. And they give magic a little bit more time, but even 3 minutes. You know, most of the consulting we do for live stage, those acts or those individual sets are 8 to 12 minutes in a show. That's what you'll see. That way, if you see a guy doing an hour show, he's usually doing 8 tricks, right? He's not doing 25 tricks.
Right.
He's not doing 25 3-minute tricks. He's doing 8 tricks through the 1-hour show. So most of the stuff we're writing for live is 8 to 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got to get that down to 3.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that at all?
Yeah.
It just takes a lot of work.
It does. Now, whenever that you work with people who have been on Britain's Got Talent or America's Got Talent, And they move forward. Do they come back to you and say, ooh, it worked, let's do something else? Or do they bring you an idea, or do you give them ideas?
It really all just depends, right? It's like any business relationship. They give me as much as I need, I take as much as I need, and it's just a balance. Yeah. Most of my performers, once we get them in and they see some degree of success, they understand that some degree of that success was from me. Mm-hmm. So then I continue to work for them for you know, most of the guys that come in, when we get them to the right space and they're successful, they're happy to hire me and bring me back. I won't say that everyone comes to me is going to win America's Got Talent or even make it through the audition rounds. Some people just aren't ready for that from a performance standpoint, from a lifestyle, from whatever reason, they're not ready.
Hey, can you tell that and you sort them out whenever they come, or you just work with everybody?
So right now,
I vet them, I guess, to my
answer. For sure. You right now I vet them primarily through, I have a little test that I give them, which sounds sort of weird. So I'll say, if somebody calls me and they're like, oh, I want to be on America's Got Talent, I go, okay, film the video of what you want to do for me and then send me a copy of the script. Mm-hmm. And 90% of those people never email me back.
That will show you a lot right there. They're really not committed.
I immediately know that even if they were to hire me, they're not going to put in the work I'm asking them to do. Because they want to dream about doing something big, but nobody wants to do something big. Nobody wants to put in the work. The other example of that is I have performers who've – I've got a Cinderella story about a performer who pitched to Fool Us three times, didn't get on. We pitched the fourth year, got on the show. They filmed and he got cut. Mm-hmm. Pitched the fifth year, went back and fooled them and brought home a trophy.
Wow.
Because we worked hard. He's one of the hardest working guys I've ever worked with, because when I say, look, I need a video and a script, and he sends it to me, I get it. And then I go, look, this video is no good. Refilm it in a different space, change this. And sometimes you have to film not one audition video. Sometimes you have to film nine of them.
Really?
Well, because you want to put up the best one that you can.
Nine different tricks or nine different variations of the same trick?
Well, nine different takes of the same trick.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Right? Because you film it, and we've blocked and rehearsed it, but then you film it and invite your friends into your living room to do it.
Right.
And then when I watch it, I go, it's just too slow.
Yeah.
We need to change. We need to take out all these lines, add these. And then a lot of guys will be like, it's too much work.
Yeah.
But when you make those changes and we make a new draft and you go to 2.1, right? Mm-hmm. Then we refilm it and make it 2.1. It's getting closer to being a better pitch.
Right.
But you know, a lot of guys will just pitch. A lot of people will just pitch one video. And
they'll
it'll
film something in a church basement and then send that in or something.
And they'll do it in not their performance clothes.
Yeah.
And they'll say things like, well, normally I don't dress this way. Well, then dress the way you dress, right?
Yeah.
You need to – I talk a little bit about it. It's sort of like a first date. You need to make the best impression you can the first time. And if you show up to your first date in sweatpants and then apologize because you normally wear a suit, right?
Yeah.
The chances of you prolonging that relationship are very minimal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also Fool Us is good about communication. So if we send them an act that they love but they don't love the trick, they'll sort of get in contact with me and say, look, Brent, we love this but not the trick. Can you find another trick? So we may have spent 3 months coming up with the perfect trick for Fool Us, and casting sees it and says, look, we really like this person. We really like this performer. But the trick won't work on the show.
Yeah.
And now I've got to call you and go, everything we've done for 3 months, we have to throw away. But
wow.
The good news is we have the door open to a conversation.
Yeah.
So what we did for 3 months wasn't a waste. What we did for 3 months was enough to get our foot in the door to start a conversation. So now we're going to have to work hard. And now we've got not 3 months, but 2 weeks to figure out how we're going to work hard to hit this second deadline to make it work.
Yeah.
And that just, I think I said this in my lecture a little bit, try harder.
Yeah.
That's it. You just have to try a little bit harder. And that's the key to all of it, man. Just stand up to the plate, try as hard as you can, swing as hard as you can, and eventually you'll hit some home runs.
That's great advice. Well, we obviously should sit down, and I'm sure the listeners might write in and say, hey, sit down with Brent for a lot longer. Let's talk for a good conversation sometime.
Sure.
But I know that you're busy, and you're a dealer, and you and your wife have got things to sell over too.
So. We appreciate the opportunity to sit down, Scott. We appreciate what you're doing for Magic and putting your voice out there and putting these thoughts and ideas out there. So thanks for stopping me and saying hi.
Well, thanks very much. Thank you, Brent Baron. And for the Magic Words podcast, that's Brent. This is Scotty out. Now we're getting ready for the Carissa Hendricks or Lucy Darling lecture, which everyone I see is lining up for that. And someone who, by the way, is someone whose voice you recognize, perhaps from the Penguin podcast, someone whose voice I wish I could emulate. I don't know that you can. Are you either born with it or not? Here you go. Here's Mr. Eric Tate. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Hey, Scott. How you doing? Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I know. We talked, I think, a couple years ago at Magi Fest, and I was saying we do need to sit down for a longer episode.
Yeah.
You're an interesting dude, you know?
I do all right. I'm just a very lucky person who is surrounded by a really wonderful team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Well, tell me more about the Penguin podcast that you do. You say you talked a little bit about everybody comes through the P3.
Yeah. So the Penguin Magic podcast, we're on iTunes, Google, Spotify, Amazon. Just get into Google, search the Penguin Magic podcast, and we come right up. And I interview just about everyone who comes through the P3 Magic Studios when they lecture, which I'm hosting the lectures now.
You are.
Yeah. I'm hosting them. Dan Harlan is on to bigger and better and more wonderful things. Mm-hmm. And so Dan asked me to take over the lectures as he moved on to new projects. And so now I'm sitting in the chair interviewing people in the lectures. But any of those people come through. And then I also do some other interviews. We do, you know, not quite as much magic journalism as you, but if there's important topics that are going on in the world of magic, we try and cover it. Nick LaCapo and I do little product reviews and talk about current events. And then we also have a couple of segments where we get to talk about, like, magicians' top 5 tricks in under 5 minutes, Desert Island Magic books, lots of different things. And then occasionally I get to do some weird segments, like back a while ago I was bringing, when we had live shows at the P3 Magic Theater, I would grab a layperson the next day and ask them to describe a trick, so that we could compare and contrast, like, what they saw with what actually happened. So it's a lot of fun. It's a quick podcast. You should listen to it. It's a good time.
So what about Scott Alexander? Is he going to be doing something? Because I remember he and Dan, of course, used to have the hilarious Christmas things.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, I don't know what we're going to be doing this Christmas. We're in the middle of some theater upgrades, so we're not doing live shows at the moment. But next year, hopefully this year, but definitely next year, we'll be back to doing live shows. And you're going to see
in Columbus, right?
Right here in Columbus, Ohio. And we're looking forward to having all of the guests back and all of our live audiences back. And I don't know, maybe they'll do something with Scott, but, you know, you'd have to talk to Scott.
Yeah, I remember, was it a couple of years ago or last year, he did one just on his own. It was kind of a thing. He, at the last minute, he said, well, I haven't done this with Dan, but I decided to do something on my own.
So. Yeah, you'd have to talk to Scott and Dan about that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I didn't know about that, whether that was going to happen.
Well, the only thing that I know, probably what will happen is Nick LaCapo and I will put together the Penguin Penguin Magic Awards like we did last year, that we streamed last year. That was a lot of fun to do, and we'll probably do it again this year just because it was so much fun. So
we are now obviously at the Magi Fest, which is an annual thing, but it's kind of out of sequence then right now.
Yeah.
But one of the things, speaking of out of sequence, are the Penguin Max events.
Yeah.
Are they going to start picking back up soon, and what's the status of that?
We definitely want to do them. I could not...
Great convention.
There's so much fun to do. We have a blast doing them. We get to do all kinds of fun lectures. Like, Nick and I get to lecture on stuff that we really like to lecture on that we don't get to lecture on other places. Like, I know Nick was doing a thread workshop, and he's done a Svengali workshop, which some of that stuff is translated into the Penguin Magic School that's happening right now. I can't give you exact dates, but I know getting the Mac conventions spun up again is a huge task. We want to do it. I just can't give you any dates.
It's probably not going to be at least until 22.
Oh,
2022.
Yeah, probably not until next year. So, yeah. But it's definitely, like, they're not going away. They're just on pause. Like, literally, when the world went into lockdown, we were on our way to the airport to go to one, and then everything shut down. So, they're coming back. You will hear when.
Okay, so kind of stay tuned to the website.
Yeah. Stay tuned to Penguin Magic. To tune into the podcast or the live streams that Nick does on Facebook and Instagram every Wednesday. You know, check us out on YouTube. We're always putting out a bunch of new stuff on YouTube. Top tens, product reviews, current event stuff.
For Penguin on that? Or P3 or what?
Penguin Magic. Yeah, the Penguin Magic YouTube page. So just keep an eye on that, and as soon as they come back. Right now there's a lot of energy, you know, on the Penguin Magic School and getting those going on. These, like, nice, intimate Zoom classes with magicians. Mm-hmm. So we're really focused on that at the moment, just because that's something that everyone can participate in all around the world.
Yeah.
But the Max events are definitely coming back.
Yeah, they, again, are so much fun because for those who may not have attended, they have evolved, actually. It used to be like a dealer day kind of a thing where some of the dealers would do like a short lecture or something, and then it expanded so this way you have a full evening show with full lectures as well as the dealers and other things going on. So
yeah.
It's like a weekend thing.
Yeah, and we try and travel to, like, big metropolitan areas, and also we try and target areas that, like, may not have a big convention. So if you're not, like, going to come to some of the bigger conventions, then the Max events try and hit some areas that are a little closer to you.
And you get pretty good turnout for that also. Usually it's just like an overnight, or is it two nights? I guess it's two nights.
It's two nights. It usually, like, the convention starts up on Friday, goes through Saturday, then everyone goes home Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and like you said, you have them in different places around the country, and there are several. You probably have about four or five?
I believe there's five. They're different regions. So there's like there's one in the Southwest, there's one in the Southeast, there's one in the Northeast, there's one in the Midwest, and then there's one on the West Coast.
Yeah. I used to put those on my convention calendar, so if people can go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll see, we can click on the convention calendar. As I find out they're available, I put them right up. So.
Yeah, you know, and they'll come back. It's not an if, it's a when. So,
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks very much. You enjoying this convention, by the way?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. It was very nice of Josh and Andy to fly some of my best friends to the city that I live in. This is a great convention. Really love it. Scott and I are distracted right now because there's some sort of announcement going on.
So there's announcing something over there. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, Scott and I will narrate this interruption for you. This is...
There is a guy who has got the attention of the entire crowd, holding up a yellow sign that no one can read unless you're three people away.
We're not sure if this is some kind of pre-show work. There's a chance that he could be setting up something for Aussie Wynn, but we don't know for certain.
But that would be my guess. So that way, everyone's going to be yelling out the same card whenever that Aussie asks what the card is. And it will be great for those people who aren't part of this group right now.
Yeah. Scott,
only people here are in on this.
Scott and I will update you as soon as we have information as to what this interruption was
and
about.
A confirmation.
Scott, thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Let's do this again.
The Magic Word Podcast. That was Eric Tate. Thanks, buddy. Scotty out. One of the people who was featured in the show on yesterday, today is, of course, Saturday, but Friday we had a show and a lecture that was provided by Alex Poyce, and he's with me now. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic. Good to see you here, and congratulations. This is your first time lecturing, is it, at
Yeah, Fest? I've never done a talk or anything like that. I've performed at a few conventions and that kind of thing.
You had to feel elated. I mean, you got good response, I think.
Oh, thanks for saying that. You know, I did really, a lot of work went into it, and so I was glad that it went well and people really enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they did, and it's we don't see really a lot of dove magicians, and you know I see a lot of young people who are here, most everybody seems like are close up guys, you know it seems like, and so when someone was saying in their lecture, it's important that you start thinking about a stage check. I think it was John Graham the first night saying a lot of you guys may do close up, but think about actually get on stage and doing something. But you're going like beyond that, aside from being just an excellent close up worker, which by the way, your close up was great in the show.
You
didn't just do doves, but you also had something on stage. It was great.
Thanks.
But you've gone a step further by doing doves, because that is a real commitment. Because you said your doves are how old now?
Yeah, BB, she's in her 20s, and then Airplane and Uno are about 10 or 12 at this point, and then Jake Cameron and Benny are about 5 or 6 years old.
Wow. And obviously because you know them by name, I mean, you have named them, I mean, they are part of your family. I mean,
Absolutely.
So they live with, like in the apartment there in New York with you?
Yeah, you know what, as a New Yorker, the living arrangements are always changing and, you know, flexual. So I've had different arrangements over the years as to, you know, where they live. But it's always, I'm the one taking care of them.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I figured that you were. Now, do you continue to train them, or since they have gotten to a point where they do what you want them to, do you continue to, or do they kind of know the work?
I don't have like a training regimen, but you know, thankfully there's enough performances where you know they're doing it, and that part of it is the part that they keep up with. It's just the show itself is the thing that you know they get to do and have fun with, and is the training, is the show. Yeah.
Now, when I used to keep doves, I kept them outside my house, and I had a coop for them and everything, and they were always. Have laying eggs, and so my wife was, you know, saying I'm doing abortions regularly. I'm just throwing these eggs up against the fence, you know.
Yeah.
And so, what do you do with them?
I've had no success with them as parents. I know some friends of mine that have birds who just have been able to find.
They raise them. They let them.
They raise them. Everything. But for me, even you know, if I let them keep the egg for a while, they seem to sit on it and crack it, and like they don't never get very far.
Oh, really? So they're not fertile. And
no. Often they're not fertile. You can tell by holding up to the light if you let them sit out for a while. But yeah, they just haven't had much success with it. So most of the time, I just take the egg out when they're done with it.
As I recall, also when we were in Cuba and you were performing there, you did a dove act. Now, what was it like?
Yeah.
I may have asked you this question back
then.
But
that was the only. It's the time I borrowed birds, and it's a challenge for sure. Thankfully, it's like a as you could see in the performance yesterday, I have all these other things I do, so it's not a requirement I find most of the time. Most of the time I'm doing the birds, I'm in New York, and so the traveling part isn't too much of a hassle. Most of the time when I'm traveling, I'm doing other performance pieces.
Aside from public performances, like at Monday Night Magic, what kind of venues do you normally work? Are they private parties, I assume, or corporate events?
Yeah, private parties and corporate events.
Weddings,
and
do weddings?
Weddings, yeah, everything in between. I found that this year, as we're kind of making our way through the pandemic and out of the pandemic, one of the first things that returned to live performances was private events, because there's less people in decision makers, so they can just do it. And so the weddings and the private parties and the mitzvahs and the get-togethers in New York was one of the first things to return to live, yeah.
There was someone who had also said today in one of their topics or their lecture, saying the video that you showed us is not something, obviously, that it was for the general public. However, it would be great if the public could see the kind of effort and work and, like, 8 years you'd put into just that one airplane trick
thing. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely isn't the kind of thing I would show to lay people, but I think all of us magicians struggle with that. You know, how much do you want to reveal about your process where people can appreciate it? And sometimes it happens before the show, sometimes after the show, sometimes during the show. And, you know, I think what we can all have recognize when we go into a museum, we can see an amazing painting.
Right.
We don't have to see all the hours that went into it. We can just look at it and feel the sense of all that went into it.
Do you appreciate, or would you, one last question here before we go into the next lecture with Nate Staniforth, as far as encouraging other young people, older people, whenever, to get into dub magic, would you recommend that?
Follow your passion. If it's something that speaks to you, for sure. If it doesn't, then probably not for you.
How did that happen to speak to you? I mean, did you, obviously, you saw Channing Pollock or somebody? Or
yeah, what? I mean, Pollock was amazing. Oh, my gosh. And over the years, I've gotten to, like, know him through his work, and his wife made him these beautiful ties that I own and all this cool ephemera. So it's been a really neat thing to do over the years, is get to collect that little thing.
So if you get inspired by somebody, then follow that passion.
Absolutely, of course. Yeah.
But that, again, that is a commitment when you have a live animal, and that's another thing, is to be able to take care of them. You just can't say, oh, that's not going to work out, I'm going to let them go.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to know what your plan is, for sure.
Yeah. Alex, thanks very much.
Thanks,
always good talking to you, my friend. So from the Magic Word Podcast, that was Alex Boyce. Scotty out. We just finished with Nate Staniforth's performance and lecture, which was pretty outstanding. He is a college entertainer, college circuit entertainer, been performing all around the country, and really doesn't perform for magicians in particular, nor attend magic conventions and hang out with magicians in general. So it was kind of cool to see him, although some of you might remember going back into the archives where we did have an episode with Nate Staniforth in talking about his book that was for the public, I think about called... No Ordinary Magic. I can't remember the title of that now. But anyhow, go back and just do a search on the website for Nate Staniforth. Highly recommend you go back and listen to that. It's quite interesting. And right now we're going to hear somebody else who's interesting. This is a friend of mine we haven't heard from in a long time. Please welcome, if you would please, Reuben Moreland. Hey, Reuben.
Hi, how's it going, Scott?
Fantastic. It has been a long time.
It's been a really long time, yeah.
I was going to say, was that... It was out on the East Coast. Where were we last time? I remember... Because there were some other youth that were involved with this, and it wasn't a Cape Cod conclave.
No, it would have been probably more recent than that. Yeah. But yeah, World Magic Seminar, an IBM convention. I mean, this has been a long time.
You were doing a lot of performing and everything, and you had won a lot of contests and as well. And then what did you do with after you?
I know,
got
right?
your notoriety and fame.
Yeah, after about, I'd say 2015, I did FISM a second time. And then after that, I kind of went to college and started getting into filmmaking. And so I still do a little bit of magic. But, yeah, I've been working mostly in doing video production, film.
For what kind of market? I mean, are they institutional films, or you mean? Or?
So, no, so I work for myself, a production company. I do mini documentaries, music videos, corporate video, advertising, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then also a little bit of magic consulting. I've been working on America's Got Talent and certain shows like that with magicians like Dom Chambers, creating really large-scale effects for TV, which has been really exciting, you know? Kind of a dream come true. I'm not doing it full-time, but it's a fun project whenever I get to do them.
Close-up? Because, I mean, you really kind of specialize in close-up. That's what you did at FISM and others.
A lot of close-up magic. Also a lot of prop building, you know?
Woodworking background?
I don't, but I was always crafty, you know.
Yeah.
You know, building stuff. Also, with shows like AGT, what's exciting is that they have a whole art department. So I can build a prototype for a trick out of cardboard and razor blades and then bring it to them and say, hey, can you make this look like a real thing?
Yeah.
And because it's such a short timeline, you almost need that team to get it done, you know. You know, you have 24 hours to create a trick. So you can spend 12 of them making the trick, and then they can go and dress it up and paint it and get the licensing and the logos to make it look like, you know, the fake thing that you're trying to build.
Do you have a 3D printer, or do you play around with that stuff?
I have a bit, yeah. Well, because I have a background in video editing, I was always working on design work. Yeah. So, you know, whether it's AutoCAD or 3ds Max, that kind of stuff, I've been playing around with it.
Well, as far as consulting with magicians and helping them with their acts at AGT, how do they find you? Do they seek you out, or how do you find people who are wanting to go, or what?
So not all of them are magicians. Sometimes, you know, we're using magic for non-magic reasons. So a lot of people have been magicians that I've met over the years at conferences, and we end up jamming anyway, and so like, hey, well, why don't I invite my friends and come together, and we'll just, you know, be creative. But I've also been experimenting with, you know, things like using Pepper's Ghost for teleprompter technology, for shooting interviews, for video production. You're using the same technology of, you know, projecting an image, but you're doing it to do face-to-face interviews, which is really exciting. We've just been toying around with, you know, using magic to help my career in film otherwise, you know.
Was one of your goals of competing in contests to ultimately get to FISM?
Yeah,
do you want to get well-known?
I had one main goal, and I was really fortunate that I got to do it when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
So it was Le Plus Grand Cabaret du Monde, the French TV show. It's a cabaret TV show that, you know, if you in the early 2000s, you'd see every major magician was on that show. If you ever YouTubed a magician, it was that same French TV show. And I spoke with Boris Wilde, and he got me the information of the person, and I just cold called them. I sent an email to Monique, who I think is retired now. She was the main booker. She came out of FISM and did a lot of the European tours. And I just randomly emailed her once when I was in college. I said, hey, here are a few of my acts. It would be an honor to do it. And she replied to me a week later. She said, can you do next Wednesday? Can you come to Paris?
Dream come
true. Oh, my God. yes. So I ended up going to Paris. And, I mean, that was, I think it will forever be the highlight of my, you know, personal career, because it was something I wanted to do since I was
a little kid. French?
No, I don't speak French. But it was, first of all, incredibly well-run show. And it's the same set that I saw when I was 12 years old, and I got to be there, and, you know, I have that as a time capsule of, like, a memory that I will never forget from my career. So that kind of spurred out of doing the minute act. I always was more of a fan of having the 5 minutes than having the full show. I never planned on being a worker. I wanted to have those, you know, moments, those experiences, and that's why I'll still go to conventions here and there and, you know, perform and compete every once in a while, just to see friends and have those, you know, those few weeks off, as opposed to making it your job, where sometimes you have that fear of it becomes your job. It's no longer your passion.
What would you say to people who are particularly young people who might be interested in competing and going into a contest?
I think competing is for me personally, it was the best thing that I could have done in magic, because, first of all, it gives you a deadline. You have a goal, and you have a very, very condensed piece of art that you get to create. It's also very social. I mean, a lot of my friends that I met competing are my friends to this day, and not every one of them does magic for a living. I mean, like myself, some people are filmmakers, some people work in finance and engineering, but we have that core experience of traveling around the country doing the World Magic Seminar competition, or the IBM or the SAM or whatever it is now that's happening. It's a good way to build that community when you're younger. And I know social media and stuff makes it a little easier now, which it wasn't as prominent when I was a kid, which makes me feel really old now. Like, I'm not even that old, but it's, like, changing so fast.
Yeah.
But, yeah, competitions is a really great way to challenge yourself. And I implore anyone to go to FISM if they haven't, just to watch it, because the magic you see there in the competition is very different than the magic you'll see at any other convention or any TV show. I wouldn't say it's a higher level, but it's a totally different type of performance art. You know, you're doing these focus routines that are usually themed and expertly crafted. A lot of the time there's musicality and theatricalness to it that you don't always see in, you know, your birthday party show or other type of thing. And by no means is that a slight on birthday party magicians. It's more of a different genre that you're not always exposed to, because there's not a huge market, unfortunately, for that kind of stuff. It's more of a European cabaret thing that you see more often when you have these short, condensed acts.
Well, I've told people before, if you're thinking about wanting to compete in FISM, you need to attend FISM first to kind of see what you're going to be up against, because some people think just national or local contests, and on an international level, it's a lot different. So you should go to that first before you try to get there, because you'll be feel more comfortable once you do get there even.
Sure. I mean, I don't really look at FISM as a contest. It's more of a showcase for me. I mean, it is really just... It's like the Olympics. It's a gathering of cultures, and it's super international feel. You go there, and you see that, you know, artists from China are really doing things that are exploring their culture, and you see people from France or Germany or Spain, wherever they're coming from, South America. It's really fascinating to see how we all have the same time constrictions for categories, but how people bring in their own personal experience and culture into the routine. So for me, it wasn't always a competitive nature. It was more about exposing myself to different points of view in magic. And it's quite, you know, it's quite cathartic to see what people are doing. Yeah.
Ruben, thanks very much. It was great catching up with you.
So great to see you.
Yeah. Thanks for listening over the years.
Of course, of course. This is one of the first podcasts I ever listened to. Keep chugging along. Do it.
Thank you very much for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Ruben Moreland. This is Scotty out. All right. Well, we just finished the evening show. In fact, it was a wrap on the convention, except for tomorrow's workshops. We started off the first of this convention a couple of days ago, so talking with one partner, which was Joshua Jay, and now we're going to close it out with Andy Gladwin. Andy, great to bookend it with you two guys. Great job again this year. So
thank you very much. It was a really fun year. I think everyone wanted to see magic. I think that's why we filled it with shows. So it was just a fun year with so much magic.
This, in a way, kind of reminded me of Magic Live, because there were so many surprises and secrets and things where you just said gala show. I mean, and who was expecting Alex Ramone to come and close the show? I mean, that was a surprise to me. And the other guys, the Passing Zone and the Evisons. And it was starting off then with Danny and Stacey Cole. I mean, what a show. And then hosted by Lucy Darling. How could you go wrong?
It was a show where everyone could have been a closer. You know, it's a genuine thing of trying to work out who would close that show. So we pretty much picked at random, but it was the perfect format, and I think it worked great.
It did. Now, another thing is that all these guys have all been on Penn & Teller Foolus or America's Got Talent, I guess, or some other kinds of show. Was that kind of the thought, or did it just happen that way?
No, we never book based on credentials. We book on who we think will be perfect for this show this year. So that just happened to work out. But all the great magicians have been on Foolus and AGT, so perfect... perfect barometer, but still, we book based on who we love and who we want to have here.
Well, that kind of gets me to what I was going to ask you about as far as who you do book. Is that something that just between you and Josh, or do you have other people you have as consultants saying, what do you think about so-and-so?
So here's the secret. We book based on the people we want to see. Like, this is a selfish convention. Because
this is really the Andy and Josh convention.
It really is. We just think, if we're attending a convention, what would we want to see? And that's why it turns out like it does, because these are our friends, these are the people we want to see lecture, and we also get to talk to them about, hey, instead of doing your normal lecture as you win, would you do the lecture about how you performed the Foolish trick, you know, the famous Foolish trick? So we get to pick and choose and work with the performers and just really bring out the things that we want to see, and I think it really works.
It really does all come together. Now, as far as like the sound and light and all this, I mean, you've really got a great crew and everybody who puts this all together. Are those people that are from the old Magi Fest, or is this a group of guys that you have put together since then?
It's a brand new group, and a brand new group this year as well. We handpicked, we invested in a lot of camera equipment this year. This is we're running by three robotic cameras that just allow us to really get in close. You may have noticed we did something I don't think any magic convention's ever done before, which is we had an audience shot. So when you have the Eversons who are out in the audience and Jeff is running around getting objects, we're following him.
Yes.
And we have Azzy Wind, who was performing a trick in the audience. We have camera shots and we get to see reactions. So I've never seen that before at a convention, but I've always wanted to do it, because I think when we're looking forward, we also need to see what the performer's seeing at times. So this year we really invested in camera equipment to make it really clean.
You even had an overhead camera as well over there. Yeah.
Overhead camera that we can zoom right in, remote. Yeah, clearly I'm a nerd. I love this stuff. But it was important to us at this stage of Magi Fest to now invest back into making the Magi Fest experience as good as we can. So we really invested in tech this year.
Well, let me say, too, also, that I congratulate you about the audio, I mean the video, because as I was watching some of the lighting, whenever that they were showing the audience, I was looking around thinking, this isn't that well lit, but for some reason the lighting on the camera was like you had bright lights or something, so it must have been someone setting on the camera or something.
We spent a day getting everything right. We knew every shot we would want before we wanted it. Everything's programmed into the cameras. I'm tipping our secrets here, but every Every lighting set is cued into the camera. Every switch is cued in, ready to go. It's just, you know, we really prepare these things, and we have a great team. Mark, who runs our tech, is Vanish Link's video editor, so he knows how magic should be shown on screen because that's his job all day, every day.
And at one time you were talking about actually having virtual to kind of help or complement the actual convention.
Yeah, then we really wanted to do a virtual convention, so bringing MagiFest virtual and in-house, or a hybrid convention, as they call it in the conference industry. But this year we decided, with so many restrictions with COVID and so many complications, such as the mask rules and all of the changes that were being made right last minute, we thought it was the right thing to do to just focus on having a great event. So right. So instead of trying to split our attention, split our team's attention, we just thought, let's just give everybody what they want, a really killer convention that we can all be together at. So we focused all our energies there. And you know what? Reflecting now, we've literally just finished. I'm so proud of how we were able to do a very COVID-safe convention.
It has been. Everybody is all pitched in together, as far as everybody has been good on wearing masks and everything. And
it's been amazing. I have not seen a single person break the mask rule, and everyone is saying how it's completely comfortable. They came into this worried that maybe it's going to be uncomfortable wearing a mask all day, but yeah. Everybody has been respectful of everybody. The only people to take their masks off are the performers on stage. Spectators have their masks on stage, but it gelled. It just worked.
Right.
So I'm so glad we decided not to do the hybrid event this year, so we could focus on just making the event as good as we can.
And you were just complying also with not only the city, but the state mandates, as far as you had 300, and then they opened it up a little bit more, so you can do 500. Is that right?
Yeah, so the state didn't mandate exactly how many people we could have here. We actually did that based on our calculations of the safety of how many people. We know we can get 1,200 people in this hotel.
Yeah. Well, you move the chairs far apart. Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah, that was really important to us. We wanted everyone to feel comfortable. This wasn't an optics thing. This is not us thinking about social media and what the photos look like. Mm-hmm. This is how do we make the safest convention. Yeah. So as opposed to last year, you have more space on either side of you. You have more space at the front and the back when you sat down. And we have outdoor hangout areas. We split people up amongst other hotels as well. So we made sure there were separate hotels so that other people go back and hang in other hotels. So we really tried to think about how we can make this as safe as we can. And I feel like, reflecting on it, I think we did it. And I'm pleased with that.
And you made this really, as every year it always is, a special experience in which you always have posters for the guests of honor and everything. But then also other things that you give out, like you had the special thing for the memory of Simon Irenson. And then the masks that everybody got. Cool.
Yeah, that's an important thing. I don't know whether you've seen the mask yet. This is a mask that we invented in the Vanish Link team, where the mask folds inside out. There we go. You have it right there. It's not a visual podcast, but you're holding it up, and I like that, Scott. You're doing a good job. But it folds into a keychain, so our hope is people can use them and put them on their keys so that they, you know, don't. They've always got a mask when they need it.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone got a Vanish Link deck of cards, the Simon Aronson book. So we did a memorial event for Simon Aronson. I don't know whether you've talked about that yet on the podcast.
A little bit, but not in detail.
So this was something we wanted to do because Simon meant so much to us and still does. And without Simon and his wife Ginny, we wouldn't have our youth scholarship program. On a normal non-COVID year, we would bring in 30 to 50 young magicians who can come and attend for free. And we help with their travel, we help with their hotel, and we just want to help as many young magicians to come. And that wouldn't have been possible without Simon and Ginny. They launched that with us. So it was so important, beyond the obvious reasons, to honor Simon. But it was important for those reasons as well, to say thanks for all he's done. And Ginny was here with us. And it was just a really great event with some of his friends talking about him, performing his magic. And then everybody got a book afterwards. Yeah. Everyone in attendance, it's important that they could get to remember Simon. So we produced a special book. I'm expected to get home to a load of emails from people wanting this book. There are no more copies. It's just for people here.
Yeah.
But that's kind of thing that's important to us, to extend the experience and just give something that people weren't expecting.
Yeah, I could tell the emotion and everything. It was in Josh's voice as he was talking. And also, I've got to say, that little part that you guys did yesterday, you know, and Josh, and you sat down and talked about Josh's book, and then the little part that you were talking about that was amazing about going and talking to the guy in Serbia who was the pirate. And so, is that something that's going to be available that people are going to be able to see or hear or somewhere?
I don't think so. I think these events are very much in the moment. If you're not here, unfortunately, you've missed out. However, the piracy thing in particular, particular, I'll still be talking about for a long time to come, I'm sure, because that's kind of the weirdest, scariest, strangest experience of my life. So that's a story I'll be telling for a long time to come.
Thank you for doing what you're doing on that, by the way, because it was interesting. I was thinking there were thousands of pirates when you were playing whack-a-mole, but then you've identified just the three people. But anyhow, it was an amazing story.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for what you've done.
Oh, you're very kind. We have a long way to go, I don't think we can ever stop piracy in Magic, but it's a good time right now to try and to stamp it out a little bit, to throttle it, because I think we're at a tipping point now where people are expecting piracy to be the norm right now. You know, so there are people who buy from pirate websites because they don't know any different.
Right.
So this is the time we can fix that, and if we don't fix it now, who knows what could happen.
That's exactly right. Well, I'm not going to take more of your time because you're in the afterglow of all this. I know I'm trying to get things shut down here as well. I want to give you and Josh just really a great attaboy and pat on the back for a job well done, particularly here at the end of COVID, and there are so many things, you know, hurdles you've had to overcome, and finally doing it and making sure this was the 89th year, and then getting back on track next year on January the 16th through 18th, is that right?
I think it's the 20th through 22nd. So it's going to be a really great year. We have new ideas, new format for the convention. We have lots to plan, and not very long to plan it.
A new format, a little bit different.
And between now and then, we also have the session to organize in London. So
is that a TBD? I mean, is that for sure, or are you just...
Yeah, that's for sure. That's the week before Magic Fest in January. COVID willing, you know, always hurdles to jump, and there'll probably be less minute hurdles, but that's the plan to get back on track to yearly conventions in January, because I think we all need it.
And so right now, whenever, like, I registered, they were saying there's only limited to 500, and that's because, at least as of today's restrictions, but that could open up to more later, you think?
Yeah, I really hope so, but we have to do what's safe, and so today I am expecting 500, and we can review that as the winter comes and as COVID changes. But my worst fear would be to tell people they can't come. Mm-hmm. So we'll limit it to a low number. And, you know, I hope that the world gets back to normal and that we can get the 1,200 people
get vaccinated,
Exactly. Let's keep that going. And,
That's right.
Everyone is vaccinated is welcome. I don't know how we stand for 2022 yet, other than we're going to put on a great event.
Yeah. Andy, again, thank you very much for all you've done at this convention, other conventions, and in Magic in general and everything with Vanishing Ink and the things you guys put out, constantly good products and everything then, too. So congratulations, and I don't know how to give you enough kudos. So behalf of the Magic world, for those few I might speak for, congratulations.
Thanks very much, and thanks for all you do, Scott.
You
really bet. Appreciate it.
Job well done. That was Andy Gladwin here as we're wrapping up then from Magi Fest 2021. This is Scotty out.